satisfy you. Welcome to Southpaws, episode 371, new pod, who dis?
What is even going on?
I'm one of your hosts, Fuzzwolf.
I'm Saverin.
And I'm Shiva.
Here we are, with a new name and a new year. It's 2018. Nothing exists before this, yet everything exists afterwards.
Our podcast has regenerated.
Yep.
This is our... Do we count each variation of the cast of the previous one as an incarnation, or is this truly our second incarnation?
I mean, sticking with an incarnation for 10 years, I mean, come on.
Tom Baker did 7.
Yeah, true.
I'm going to say this is our second incarnation.
Okay, so that clearly means we got at least a dozen more or generations in us. So
every 10 years, so 120 years from now.
All the previous times, whatever, like, we juggled the cast around or whatever, was really just, like, the Doctor wearing a scarf or not, or wearing a different coat, deciding to wear a hat and then not.
Wardrobe getting uppity.
Yeah.
They had to launder that particular coat for that week, so.
Yes.
We have survived both the new year and the holidays.
Yeah.
We're back. It is January 3rd?
No,
4th. January
4th. 4th, yeah.
Dates, times, whatever. We're all here in decent-ish health. Yeah, we haven't recorded since the 7th. Even though the episode that you and I recorded on the 7th, Fuzz, didn't get out until way later. I was like, I had the file, like, oh, crap, I never uploaded this.
Travel back in time to December 7th.
Back when we were not cast.
Well, I also had to edit out parts where we were having the discussion about the dire state of Patreon, and in the time between us recording it and, the
and
time
releasing it, that totally
changed. They fixed their shit.
Yeah.
Still cost us a few patrons, but... You can totally check it out at patreon.com/southpawscast. Yeah, I went through the effort of changing everything around today.
Yep, thank you, Idis, for quickly turning around, updating our icon.
Yep.
Thank you for still having the font file.
Yeah, for sure, because we Idis a long time ago. We'd been using it, but with the name change, she was like, oh, well, we should have her update it. And she did. And got it to us today, so when we did the grand swap of Twitter and Telegram group updates and Podbean updates, so basically the reasoning why we did such
so
a thing.
So, much like the name of the original show, this came about because of a silly joke I made on social media. So, I guess for the people that weren't here in 2008 when we started podcasting, so we're...
In a land of live journal.
We're on our 10th year of podcasting, yes. Let me take you to a time and place that no longer exists, live journal. Well, it exists, but I've deleted mine.
Oh, I was just going to go and look and see what date that was, but you deleted it.
It was February 2008. Oh, and I'm on Dream... I ported the whole thing to Dreamwidth.
Okay.
But around that time, a podcast run by Flame called Clawcast had come out. And I don't actually know why he called it Clawcast, considering he was a phoenix and or a falcon at the time.
Well, they got claws.
Talons.
Yeah, but
me. He wasn't a feline.
He was trying to be inclusive of his non-avian cohort.
Oh, okay. Well... And I'd seen that as like a very feline name. So I'd made the silly joke of, hey, a podcast for canines would be called Knotcast. And then that kind of became a thing. And because it was a sexual reference, we made it about sex and relationships, yada, yada. And especially in the last 2 years, but gradually over time, we've stopped answering so many sex and relationship questions. And we've ranted more about politics. And we've talked more about occurrences in the furry fandom, furry media,
life,
what's going on in the news, life, what we're reading, stuff like that. So the show's really morphed in a very natural way over the course of time that the Knotcast name didn't really feel like it fit the show anymore. And I think it was sometime in December, I tweeted, like, you casual leftist furries in the political sense. It's like me, a genius, Southpaws. because the southpaw is, it's a reference to a left-handed person. I was like, leftist.
Furry.
Leftist furries, haha.
Paw joke.
Paw joke, because I'm a furry nerd. And, you know, it got some likes and some retweets. And people seemed to find it amusing. And Saverin was like, that would make a good show name. I think that's partially why we hadn't really changed before, was like finding a name that we liked, that like having to think up something that just worked again.
And something that we would obviously also want to stick to.
Yeah.
So I don't see any of us suddenly deciding, no, any of us is going to become an internet reactionary frog poster.
Right.
No.
The conceit is going to stick around. We're all going to be here in our...
Yeah.
Various left degrees.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing it after making the change, after the break, first recording of a new year.
Good and time.
10th year doing it. It seemed like really good timing, so.
Yeah, our 10th anniversary show is going to be, like, what, February 28th? Like, in
February. Yeah, it was actually originally, because 2008 was a leap year, it was supposed to be February 29th.
So, yeah, we're old. We've been doing this a long time. And, yeah, the original name was very 2008. And now we've gotten a decade older, chilled the fuck out, and changed and grown in our ways, and...
I mean, just changed as people. I mean, 10 years is a long time when you only live like 70, 80 years on average. You know,
yeah.
It's a good chunk of your life. And yeah, you learn more. You kind of change your opinions on things.
You grow.
You grow as a person.
Hopefully become less of an asshole.
Yeah. And we're not making like major
programming changes.
Major programming changes. We're just kind of solidifying or acknowledging the fact that, you know, we're not the same show we were 10 years ago. So we're rebranding. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
Name change. That's about it.
Yep.
Yeah. And maybe getting occasional guests. Like, you know, I've wanted to talk, get some folks on. Like, we've done interviews with like Pepper and stuff back in the day, but...
Yeah.
You know, have one of our author friends that was like, I'll come on the show and folks we can talk to.
And
I really liked having Jacoby on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that one.
Yeah, that was one of the My Patio episodes.
It was really nice having him on to just really talk about some shit from his perspective that you and I as pasty white dudes don't necessarily have.
Right, yeah.
It's all about learning them new perspectives to broaden your horizons.
Mm-hmm. Why I try to read from a lot of different people. Although right now I am reading a book by another pasty white dude. But
oh, no.
Yes. So go right into the What We're Reading segment. So I'm reading a book now called A Man of Shadows. It's by Jeff Noon. That's N-O-O-N. And he is mainly known. He wrote a book in 93 called Vert, which was a very interesting, sort of fitted to the cyberpunk, weird sci-fi kind of wave at the time. And funny enough, like it's had sort of a cult following for all these years. And they actually just released a role-playing game based on it. I mean, you guys might find it interesting. I don't know, like certain weird cyberpunk kind of aesthetics to it. There's also anthropomorphic dog people in it. And I read this long before I was a furry. So it's kind of funny. Like, I ordered the RPG book, even though I don't play our games at all. Just basically for the art. Because between the cyber tech kind of stuff and there's some anthro-animal characters in it. It's just like, they did a really nice job with the artwork and stuff.
Dog people.
Yep. And he'd been previously published by kind of smaller presses and stuff. And Vert was republished by Tor Angry Robot a couple of years ago for the anniversary. And this new book is published by Angry Robot. And it's going to be like a trilogy. Another one's coming out this year or next. But it's different. It's, you know, just look it up and read the blurb. It's really hard to describe his stuff. Plus, I'm only on page like 50 something at the moment, so I haven't read a lot of it.
But not super deep, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's the new one. It's weird, it's different. That's all I really say about it. But I'm enjoying it so far. So that's what I'm currently reading. I'd also started to read a book called Furry Nation by Joe Strike, which is actually a history of the furry fandom.
Oh, cool.
Actually published by a non-furry publisher. It had some interesting stuff. So, like, if you're like me, where you came in, like, I came into it in the late 90s, but the mid to late 80s really were, like, the fandom started kind of starting up, people meeting at sci-fi cons and stuff like that. And this talks about some of the people that were around in those early days and how things kind of started to come together.
And now, you know, it's 2018. Why don't you have a fursona?
Yeah, right. Like, in the future, people that don't have a fursona will be the weird ones.
It's like, what do you mean you don't have an idealized self? You just want to be just a normal flesh bag? Ugh, weirdo.
Ugly bag of mostly water.
Oh, you're just a 72%er, huh?
72%er?
Like, human body's like 70-something percent.
Oh, okay, right. God.
So, what I haven't been reading anything. I feel kind of bad. And, like, keeping up with the news actually gave me an anxiety nightmare last night that I'll get to here in a little bit. But I've been watching a show called Travelers. Season 2 has come out.
I've seen that pop up on Netflix.
It's a Canadian science fiction show that the first season got put out by the CBC or whatever. It was up there, and then Netflix bought it for season 2. And so they're doing season 2 on Netflix now. It's time travelers who are being sent back from the far future where everything is totally fucked. And they take over the bodies of people who are fated to die. Basically, they have the historical record from that time. The late 20th century was the easiest time for them to project themselves back because their supercomputer, the Director, which, sorry, that's a spoiler, can access the camera feeds of the past. It has access to all of human information, so it can project the people's consciousness back through time into the bodies of whatever person they're taking over. And they do it in a focused way sometimes, like taking over FBI agents who are going to die, or martial artists, or smart people. But then also a lot of times there's like random druggies going to die young.
Right.
In some cases. They don't do a lot of old
like
people.
Like the song. Yeah.
And in this case...
Question for you. Did they jump into them before they die and then avoid how they were going to die?
Yes.
Okay.
So, like, the main character...
Did they kill them off later? Or
what? No. Basically... They change history by them staying alive. So, like, the main character gets travelered in the first episode when, in the historical record, he was supposed to get knocked down an elevator shaft.
Right.
And in they change it, obviously, had one of their guys, a traveler, grab him by the shoulder and pull him back so he didn't fall backwards. And then the guy, like, goes, ah! Freaks out and his brain gets overwritten from the future.
So he dies as a personality.
Yes.
As a consciousness.
So that's one of the things. Like, they're still this character. The people that they were prior to them being characters in the show are totally still dead. Their bodies are just moving around with a new consciousness inside them.
Oh, so it's not like Quantum Leap where the other personality goes to the waiting room in the future.
Yeah.
While Sam's in their body.
It's also an interesting question about what happens to the bodies of the people that are projected back through time. I'm pretty sure they die.
In the future, their bodies, I guess, are they brain dead, I guess? Maybe catatonic or something?
Because that's one thing they've never shown the future in the show. They make allusions to it, and they talk about events happening in the future that shaped their lives, but they don't ever show the future.
Yeah, they're like, CBC and Netflix doesn't have the budget to...
No, they don't. And it's also really funny because they use a lot of the set pieces that are in the CW shows.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's the alleyway. Oh, that's that stairwell. So I'm recognizing physical locations
I was talking to Ajax about this the other night. Because I started watching a show that was originally aired in 2012 called Continuum.
Uh-huh.
Which is like a sort of okay show. We'll see where it's going. And also involves like people from the future that have come back in time. It was shot in Vancouver. So Ajax is like, I can see parts of Central City are back here, and part of this building that's in Star City, like all these CW shows that he watches, like Flash and Supergirl Legends.
Like the Star City amphitheater and Star Labs are the same thing, obviously. And it's just like Star Labs, they added some MacGuffins to their roof and some CG, but otherwise it's just, and it's not a drag on the show, it's just I love seeing that sort of like, oh, I know where they shot this.
Yeah.
Up there's that alleyway, up there's that,
and how the forest in Vancouver looks like everyone that Mulder and Scully ever traipsed through.
Man, this sure is a weird bit of Richardson, Texas. that was on Supernatural, which also was filmed in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
But there was this one where it was like in season one, because that was as far as Panther and I watched, where they go to Richardson, Texas, and it's this forested ass area in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, did you guys do a single bit of location scouting?
No.
There's nothing that looks like this within like 150 miles easy of here.
And the stupid thing is I think one of the two guys that the mains from there, I think one of them is from the area, no less.
Yeah, I just
felt like this doesn't look anything like fucking Richardson.
If there's Richardson, there's some sweet like hookah joints and good Mediterranean and Middle Eastern food.
We need to do Jasmine's and have that food again. I miss it.
Yeah.
It's a bit cold to smoke out there right now.
Oh, man.
They got the heaters, so.
Really hoping for, like, on New Year's Eve, I was really hoping we were going to have, like, a big multi-hookah thing out on the patio. And it turned out New Year's Eve was, like, 26 degrees.
The coldest night so far.
And it was this misty rain off and on, and
it got to the end where please don't freezing rain.
Yeah.
And I had to head home early.
And, like, there was accidents all day long, and
mostly from people being dumb and rushing.
But like I'd seen someone on Twitter, their family member had gotten into an accident and had broken her arm, and they were waiting for the ambulance to take her to the hospital. And the first ambulance was delayed because somebody crashed into it, so they had to get a second ambulance to come out and get her. And apparently the cop that was on the scene or at the hospital or something slipped on an icy patch and banged his head into a door or something. Like, it was like a comedy of errors. And I saw one of the fire departments in town was like, two different occasions, somebody crashed into one of their fire trucks. And they're like, everyone's fine, but the truck is unusable.
Well, they have to go and, like, super inspect it anytime anything like that happens, kind of like an aircraft.
And in another one, a fire truck was slightly dinged. And those things, they're not cheap, and it's not like your Corolla or something, you know? You can't just roll another one off the lawn.
You get a quarter inch of ice on any surface here in Texas, and it's Mad Max.
It's Mad Max anyways. It's just Mad Max on ice.
I think it was some meme years ago.
And we're now thinking the on ice version of Mad Max Fury Road.
It's like a musical on ice. They're skating around. No, I was thinking years ago there was a meme talking about driving into different parts of the Metroplex. And it was like on 635 into Dallas. And it was like, I live, I die, I live again.
So I did end up watching one of the animes you recommended, the MMO one. That one's actually quite good. I haven't gotten to the other one yet. I don't think Siam's downloaded it, but I did watch that MMO one, and it's really good.
It is really cute.
I also watched The Ancient Magnus's Bride, which it's good, but it's very disjointed, and not all the episodes seem to go in order that they're... It feels like I either need to be... I know it's based on a game, but it's good, but it's so scattered. You know,
see, I didn't feel that way at all. So the first one you're talking about is Recovery MMO Junkie.
Uh-huh.
But Ancient Magus' Bride is basically like linear time aside.
It felt like it was leaping around. Well, earlier on in the season, you see the dog. And then later on, they explain where the dog came from.
Yeah.
So there's that, and it also feels like there's been, like, big events or something that's been hinted at.
There's a couple times in the show where they tell a story back in time for an episode, like the origin of the corruption at the lake, mm-hmm. like what happened to make the guy go crazy and what the Queen of the Cats was.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the dog episode, which explains his origin and how he came to be the main girl's.
It didn't feel like it was going back in time when it did it.
No.
It didn't really. When I started the episode, it didn't really feel like a flashback or like they were going back in time. The episode started as normal and it progressed on. It took a while to splice it backwards in time. So, I mean, I love the art style of it. I like the story.
Very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, quick question. So, is Trappers good?
Yeah, going back to it, I'm enjoying it. It's okay. Telling an interesting story because the main cast, they basically fulfilled their mission and they're still around. Mm. Basically, their thing is if they've succeeded in their mission, they wouldn't exist anymore. So they know there's still work to be done. Their goal is to stop a catastrophic event from occurring that will wipe out humanity.
Mm-hmm. And results in the time that they came from.
Yeah. So basically they're trying to fix time and erase themselves so that other people have a chance, so that the world doesn't go through the destruction.
I mean, okay, that goes into timey-wimey a little bit, because, like, if they don't exist, then they don't go back, and that's a paradox. So they may have succeeded in their mission, but they might not disappear because they would still have to exist at some point.
That's the initial thing, but then later on they basically discover that they have altered the future a little bit. And now there's a whole new problem that's happened because a particular event that happened in their home timeline didn't happen in the future, and now there's a bunch of very angry people that are fighting for control from the master computer. So it's again very interesting that they're playing with the idea, but it's like an adventure sci-fi show.
That sounds good.
So speaking of timey-wimey, how was the new Doctor? I know you watched it.
Yes, the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Spoiler alert,
yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, so I'm mostly looking for your opinion on...
Okay, you don't want, like, major spoilers.
Yeah, just basically, does it look promising?
Oh, it was excellent. It was really good. So I first watched it because I bought it on iTunes, and then so, like, the day after it aired, it dropped on iTunes, and I watched it when I got home from Florida. But then I had also, before that, I had purchased tickets because Fathom Events did one of those things where they showed the Christmas special in theaters.
I hadn't heard that.
The Wednesday after it aired, and I bought tickets for Tieran and I to go and see it, which was really kind of nice because it's like a date night. We don't go out and see a lot of movies, so it was really cool. And it was up at the Cinemark West Plano XD, which is one of my favorite theaters.
All time.
And it was nice because it was like a little pre-show info about it, then the special, and then like they showed a behind-the-scenes part afterwards. But as you can tell from the trailers, basically 12 is trying not to regenerate, and he lands in this snowy wilderness, and he encounters his past self, the first Doctor, who in a previously unseen moment in his life, basically, where he is also refusing to regenerate. And 12 realizes if one doesn't regenerate, then all the stuff he's done for the last 1,500 years is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to basically break time. And I love the way it starts. You see them, and it opens up and it says, previously on Doctor Who. And it shows scenes from the beginning of the first Doctor's last episode. And it says, 709 episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how many shows can say that and have it be completely accurate?
True.
You know? So, the first part of it is the black and white original First Doctor. Several scenes establishing where he was and what happened. And then it fades into the new actor that's playing the First Doctor. Leading it in. It shows his hand glowing with the regen energy, the way they do in the recent Doctor Who's. they set that up. It's, well, this isn't a spoiler. This is all in the trailers. But, like, Bill shows up and there's a mystery and they have to figure it out, stuff like that. But there's some really good banter between 1 and 12. So the first Doctor being written, he was a Doctor from 63 to 66. And it was a very different time. So they do this interesting sort of dichotomy between the two of them where the first Doctor is kind of sexist, where he walks into 12's TARDIS and he's like, oh, this needs a good spring cleaning. It's obvious that Polly, his companion, is no longer around, you know, because she's the one that would do the dusting. And 12's like, you can't say things like that. And one goes, who says? And he's like, everybody you will meet for the rest of your life. And there's several things like that where 12 is just like, can we pretend that that didn't happen?
Jesus, Grandpa, get it together.
Yeah. And it's funny because they previously did this in the show, the 20th anniversary special, The Five Doctors, where the first Doctor basically asks the fifth Doctor's companion, Tegan, to go and get him and his granddaughter some refreshment, you know, some food and tea. And Tegan, being a 1980s woman, is like, what the fuck? And Five is kind of like, sorry, I kind of used to be a little, you know, one mellows with age. So it's been a theme in the show before that one is a bit old fashioned. But, you know, like many people, the Doctor changes his attitudes with time as he goes out into the universe and becomes a more enlightened person. Bill has a good conversation with one about why he originally left Gallifrey. And it's not an answer we'd heard before. And the Doctor had always been a little cagey about why he left Gallifrey in the past. So that was an interesting twist. And then, of course, at the end, he accepts regeneration. We already know this part because 13's already been cast. And he regenerates into Jodie Whittaker, who's the 13th Doctor. You know, she has one line, which, of course, I won't bother spoiling that. And things happen, and it ends with to be continued. So you never really see much of the new Doctor in a regeneration episode. They usually leave the full introduction to the character and what they'll be like and stuff for the next Doctor's first full episode, which I'm sad to say is scheduled for the fall. Yeah. Instead of, like, some seasons of Doctor Who have started up in April, they usually start around Easter weekend.
Yeah.
So we won't actually be able to see 13's first full episode until fall of this year. So that's a little disappointing. I believe it's also a shorter season, too. It's like 12 episodes plus a Christmas special instead of 13 plus a Christmas special. So maybe they're making cutbacks. I don't know. But like I always am with Doctor Who, I absolutely loved Peter Capaldi. Love, love, love the 12th Doctor. And I always say this, he'll probably remain one of my favorites. But now I'm also really looking forward to seeing what the new Doctor is going to be like, what the new actress will bring to the role, and, you know, what her interpretation of this character that's lived for 2,000 years will be like. So I'm excited to see what happens. And you can tell, so there's a lot of splody bits when the Doctor regenerates in the TARDIS. So they make it pretty clear that the TARDIS is fucked. So they're probably going to do what happened when 10 changed into 11. They're probably going to regenerate the TARDIS too. So 13 will probably have a brand new console room, and they, you know, they might adjust the outside and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So it'll have new title sequence and all that. So lots of new stuff to look forward to. And she's going to have companions that we've yet to meet. So
exciting time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. Pity I have to wait so long, but the Christmas special, definitely worth checking out. I think you could probably watch it even if you're not fully up to date on 12's adventures. You probably still understand what's going on. So I'd say, you know, this and whatever her first episode ends up being are probably good jump on points for people that don't want to go back to 1963 and watch the whole... I
mean, hell, or you can go back to, like, what, 2005 or whatever.
Yeah, like, even at this point, like this just wrapped up season 10. Even going back to 2005, when it returned from a long break, is, like, a shitload of episodes to catch up on.
Even in British season terms.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, in Doctor Who has longer seasons than a lot of other British shows. A lot of other British shows have, like, 6-season episodes, like Black Mirror season 4 just dropped, and I think it has 6 episodes, and I've watched like 2 or 3 of them so far. I'm trying not to marathon Black Mirror because I really enjoy that show. Like, so I'll watch like an episode now and then.
I will admit that I've had fun seeing people kind of dunk on it because a lot of it seems very like, oh, technology, and like, what if the whole show was written by this one guy who throws out lines like, what if your mom ran on batteries? What if a Roomba fucked your dog? It's not like that.
I have seen a couple of tweets where someone has duct taped a handgun to the top of a Roomba and just captioned it Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it is like extrapolating the technology and the social media and stuff that we have now out to a really frightening point. But it's basically, it's a Twilight Zone, but for scary technology. Basically. And, you know, like, there was a couple of episodes last season, and even, surprisingly, the first episode of this season, no spoilers, but it actually has a happy ending. They're not all as completely doom and gloom as they usually are. But it's a very good show. You should definitely watch it. It's a British show, but it's like, produced or co-produced by Netflix. So it's another show that, like, Netflix is basically keeping going.
They have their fingers in that pie.
Yes, they do. Which is cool.
So, another show that apparently that's getting resurrected is Animaniacs. Did either of you guys watch that show?
Like, as a kid?
Well, while younger.
Oh, God, yes. I mainlined Animaniacs. I loved it.
Did you, Fuzz?
I am slightly too old to...
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Like, I remember watching Tiny Toon Adventures, which would have been out when I was... 15, 16, maybe.
You're like so, 1 year older than me. You are not too old.
I am. Animaniacs came out when I was 18. I was not watching cartoons.
No, it didn't.
It came out in 94.
Wikipedia, that shit.
I literally looked at this day. It came out in 94 or 95. I would have been like 18, 19 years old.
Well, in my case, I was watching it. I got to, you know, I had Disney Afternoon. I had, you know, DuckTales, Rescue Rangers, all that fun stuff, Tailspin. Yeah. So I was right there in that sweet spot of being a kid, mm-hmm. around, you know, watching Lion King and Aladdin, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So I have fond memories of it. I remember watching it with my dad. My dad liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really interested to see what they can do with the show nowadays. Because, like, a lot of the show relied on references and stuff because... there was less spread out culture, and now that we have so many people with so many different things, it'll be interesting to see what they have to draw on to make comedy from, because they can only riff certain things necessarily. Mm-hmm. Oh, they make these references, like, well, the whole look for fingerprints, and Doc grabs, you know, a caricature of Prince the musician, and lines like that, and nowadays, they have to think up something different.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, they can't reference, like, oh, we're going to make a reference to some YouTube character because people are like, who? I'll give it a shot. Like, mm-hmm. not going to lie, I think it was a great show, but let's see what they do.
That, you don't want to reference a YouTube celebrity because they'll probably turn out to be a racist or something anyway.
Yeah, or...
it'll be like, oh, that episode of the new Animaniacs turned out really cringy 6 months later when they became a milkshake duck.
Yeah, you know, they reference a super popular guy who, well, there was that one guy who went to Japan and... filmed the dead body, and then was like, oh no, I got caught.
Yeah, like, and I liked his excuse on that. By liked, I mean not. The, like, oh, it was an accident, and I was like, okay, I could see finding a dead body and filming it as an accident. Because if you're finding it, and you're like, oh my god, what the fuck am I doing? Okay, but go flying home, editing it, and posting it to YouTube. You do not like accidentally fucking trip over the cat and post a video to YouTube.
I tripped over the cat and heavily edited this 20-hour video down to 15 minutes of me being a dipshit.
Yeah, and accidentally posted and monetized it. Yeah,
yeah,
and made the thumbnail the dead body. Apparently,
oh Jesus,
that's what I heard or read.
This is where it makes me feel old, and I'm sure a lot of folks have that, where you're like, who? Who the fuck? And, you know, I'd get this back when I, with the Pony Cons, because I'd be like, oh, I'm such and such YouTuber, and I'm like, I've never heard of you, and that would make them very mad. But when you've got multi-million follower YouTubers that are really popular with the teenagers, and you're like, who?
Yeah, I had not heard of this guy. And I've only heard of people like Markiplier and PewDiePie because you've mentioned them to me, or I've seen tweets show up talking about them.
It's like, and usually, at least in the case of like PewDiePie, it's not never good, really.
No, like PewDiePie was everything I ever saw about him was pretty universally shitty.
Markiplier seems like a nice guy, and his brother's a furry, so that's cool.
Apparently, a lot of people like criticize Markiplier for basically having PewDiePie's back.
I don't
know. And I guess maybe he said some.
Yeah, he did come for PewDiePie's defense. Wait a minute.
Isn't Markiplier the one that, like, even though he's like mixed race?
No, that's DonTron.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, yeah, it's like the mixed race guy that's really pro Trump and anti immigrant or something.
I guess.
Like that? Okay, JonTron's another name I've heard, but...
Again, so, like, more often than not when you hear of a YouTuber, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of sad, but, yeah.
So, yeah, when it comes to what they can draw upon for the new Animaniacs, I'm really interested to see what they will do, because a lot of their referential humor that they made back in the 90s isn't going to necessarily work, because not everybody's watched insert reference to classic film here, you know, that was kind of an obscure reference back when they were making the show.
But, like, all the old animators and writers, like, knew what it was. And that was probably putting stuff in for the parents, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There was a whole different level of stuff to Animaniacs, which is one reason I liked it, even as, like, an older teen.
Yeah.
Because 93, I would have been 15? Yeah.
No, 93, I was 17. That was the year I graduated high school.
No, I was, yeah, I graduated.
You're only 1 year younger.
I skipped a grade.
In 93, I was 10.
You had to skip two grades then, because I skipped a grade and I was 17 when I graduated. Everyone else was 18.
It has to do with the cutoff dates and such.
Yeah.
I would have been 17 when I graduated without skipping a grade, but I would have turned 18 like 2 months later.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I probably still watch cartoons. So I was 14 or 15, which by quote-unquote normal terms was a little old, because, like, I was watching Tailspin when I was, like, 14. But compared to, like, most furries, there were a lot of, like, big-time animation fans.
And that's just it. I've always been an animation fan.
Yeah.
So I watch that. And I like the adult humor that I could understand in that, because it was more than just a kid show. There's some digs in there for a more mature audience. So, I enjoyed it.
Then there was occasionally other cartoons I would pick up later on. Like, people were like, oh my god, you gotta check out Road Rovers because you're a total furry. And that came out in like...
I liked Road Rovers.
96, I think. Something like that. Yeah, that was good.
I also really like Biker Mice from Mars.
Well, that was the time. So, yeah, Road Rovers for the canon furries. You had Biker Mice for the mice people. And there were Street Sharks.
Yeah, I could never get into...
Everybody's a shark.
I could never get into Street
Sharks. I didn't watch that one. I watched one or two episodes of Cowboys of Moo Mesa, so if you're...
I like that.
Yeah, I remember that, because that also had, like, a buzzard and a scorpion and an evil bull.
Oh, and did you guys watch Bucky O'Hare?
A little bit.
No, I never had that one.
Oh, a little bit. I liked it, what I could see of it.
So I will have to say, though, that in the arcade video game with the Cowboys of Moo Mesa, that whenever your character died, they became a stink.
Yeah.
Like, their character sprite fucked the ground and became a stink.
Oh my god, that's...
How dark is that?
Wow. That speaking of shit being really dark, there's this blog of people that go back and they watch stuff from their childhood, and then they rate it on nostalgia. They're like, okay, I'm heavily nostalgic for this film, so I'll rate it this. And then they rate it as an adult watching it now, whether it holds up or not, you know, influences how good the rating now is. Well, they did The Secret of Nim, and they rated it higher now than they did in Nostalgia. Because
they can see more.
Because they're like, wow, this is a really dark movie. Like they
and Watership's very dark too.
Yeah, yeah. But apparently they had some people in their family who tried to show it to some younger members of their family, and they basically screamed and ran away. They were like, what the fuck? Well, let's watch this movie. And they're like, oh, wow, I can't believe I watched this when I was six.
I loved it, though.
Because there's, like, actual blood in it, which is really weird herself. For a cartoon. You know, people getting crushed and just... There's this whole big article on it, and they're talking about, like, how beautiful the color palette is and, you know, how much, like, how, you know, how much work traditional 2D drawn animation is and... specifically the colors and the effects and stuff like that would have been like layers and layers of cells in order mm-hmm. to shoot this and stuff. But it was a really good article on Secret of Nim, which I remember being one of my favorite films.
Now I want to watch it again.
And I remember watching it really young as yeah. well.
That was one of the ones that like my go-tos. I always loved Secret of Nim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever had one of like the animated storybook type books?
Yeah.
That had all the illustrations of the Bluth, like this Bluth cell art.
Yeah.
As part of the book. And I was like, man, that was, mm-hmm. it was wildly divergent from the original material, but still really interesting.
And the thing that was interesting about the article was it's written by women. And one of them is like that they had that Justin, the rat that helps Mrs. Brisby, was like their first crush.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I think it's because he is the only character that actually treats her as an equal and not just as an appendage to her dead husband.
Yep.
You know, because like she's never given a first name. You know, she's Mrs. Jonathan Brisby. And everyone is like, oh, you're Jonathan's wife. Like, Justin actually is like treats her with a level of respect. And
like a real person.
Yeah. They're like, I don't think this was written on purpose like this at the time. But nowadays, but looking back on it, it's like, it still really holds up because you're like... You have this character who is a single mother trying like hell to save her sick child and move her family to safety. And when you look at it in that light, you're like, fuck, that is so relevant today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, yeah, I want to watch it again, having read the article on it. I'm like, fuck, it's been a few years. We need to watch Secret of Nim.
Come over on Saturday. We'll put it on.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Other thing, media-wise, that I was going to bring up also, that I think you retweeted it, was about Black Thunder.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I saw that still of that. It's like, I want to watch that.
Is it a CW seed show, their streaming platform, or is it going to be on regular-ass CW?
I only know what was in that tweet, which was not a lot.
Yeah, because... It sounds cool because it's a black lesbian superhero
mm-hmm.
and her girlfriend doing adventure-y superhero things in a CW-style show.
Yeah.
But is it going to be relegated to CW seed, like the like 5-minute shorts of... Oh, shit.
I haven't even heard of this.
What's her name? The African-American superhero from the 1940s who has an animal totem necklace...
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's about her daughter in modern day.
Oh, okay.
But it was 5-minute shorts that they put on their streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
And so it never got any notice, and you have to pay money to see it. So obviously I haven't seen it.
Oh, that's too bad.
So, yeah.
Because I remember her mother in Legends of Tomorrow.
So Black Lightning, series premiere January 16th. On CW. Black Lightning will also feature the first live-action superhero-lesbian relationship between two women of color, and this appears Thunder's love interest of Grace Choi. Grace is a half-Amazonian Asian-American with origins from the multicultural Egyptian Amazon tribe of Bana Midyal, and there's comic scenes from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool, but one of the things is, like, are they going to stick it on their... streaming service, or if it's going to be on regular TV. Because that's, like, it looks cool. I'm literally caught up on all of the CW superhero shows that have been added to Netflix. Like, I've seen everything, but I just haven't, up to the current season on, like, the current seasons that haven't hit Netflix yet, basically. And the crossover Crisis on Earth X.
I'm so behind. I'm even behind on Legends of Tomorrow.
And what's weird is, like, this season of Legends was 3 episodes shorter than everything else. It's real weird.
Huh.
Like, everything else was, like, 26 episodes, and they were, like, 22.
Oh, maybe they ran out of time.
Oh. But I had a dream last night. This is going to get into weird territory. So, we're moving into the more newsy, kind of, like, real-life shit kind of thing right now. So, I had a nuclear war dream last night.
Oh?
Yeah, so we've got Grandpa Pooh Brain and Kim Jong-un waving their dicks at each other, claiming, oh, I've got my nuclear button. Well, I've got my nuclear button, and it's bigger, and it works.
Can I add something about that right quick? So okay. I read this afternoon, an actual comment from someone who had been in the White House. Trump actually has a button on his desk, but the only button he has on his desk is to summon a valet to bring him a Diet Coke.
Nice.
So no, he does not have a big red nuke button on his desk.
Well, I'm very glad for that. He can hammer the summon Coke button all he wants. They can just bring him just a giant fucking 55-gallon drum of Diet Coke, and he can just stick a straw in it. Cool. But no, I was looking at Twitter and seeing this shit and going like, this dumb motherfucker. This is the timeline. Like, I'm gonna die in my sleep because Grandpa Pooh Brain pissed off North Korea. And, you know, this is all very far-fetched, but it's still one of those anxiety dreams that people have. And it was this long-ass scenario where basically everybody, like, the missiles were coming and we knew they were coming and didn't know where they were going to hit, but everybody knew shit's coming and the sirens were going off and, like, right before, like, oh no, they're 80 kilometers away. And then, at least in the dream, like, some weird shit starts popping off and a bunch of aliens show up and basically stop the nukes midair and say, you guys can't fucking control yourselves. We're revoking your planetary adulthood. You're our bitches now. And takes over. So, like, my dream had this bizarre twist good ending where, yay, I didn't get destroyed by nuclear fire, but
aliens now aliens are here.
It was also one of those very much internet age things where in the dream I had pulled out my phone to videotape this shit. It's like, well, if my phone survives, maybe someone can get a sweet video from it. I don't know. God, social media is such a fucking nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so anxiety-inducing, and I kind of hate it. Like, I read Twitter, and I like reading the comedy, but then there is just, like, Jesus Christ, there's all this bad shit happening.
Yeah.
And it's coming from inside the House of Representatives and the government and the White House. You know, it's not like, oh man, there's some bad shit happening. Nope, it's bad shit happening here and everywhere else. It is very depressing to deal with. Like, you know, social media is really fucking us up, I think, pretty hard in a lot of ways. Because you have instant access to, oh my God, what has that idiot man child in the White House done now? Because even if you have him blocked, which I do, I still see people tweeting about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, normally these people make good tweets and I like following them, but man, could you not? Could you maybe, you've got to dunk on Grandpa Pooh Brain. God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to.
There was a little comic I saw that was like, your mental health or keeping up on the news. Pick one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to handle, like, because, like, it's been interesting because, like, there's been historical things or, like, disasters and stuff like that, where, like, Twitter and Facebook have actually been really helpful. You know, people trapped in a building or something, and they're, like, the only message they could get out was to tweet, I'm trapped in this building after this earthquake or bomb or whatever. And then they've gotten out, you know. And you know, there have been political movements that have started on Twitter. It has been a really useful way to organize. But I mean, when Obama was president, like, all the tweets on either POTUS or on his personal account were, like, his personal account was basically managed by his campaign staff. And he would occasionally, rarely, like tweet himself and put his initials when he did. It wasn't, like, incendiary, you know? Like, this should not be in the hands of one person to, like, attack world leaders. And, like, you know, I don't know how you would fix that problem, you know, because you expect your president to act with a certain degree of adulthood. And, you know, acting presidential is a thing, and he's not acting presidential.
No.
You know? And has failed to change his behavior to be in line with the gravity of the office that he holds. And you don't want to just put in a law and be like, well, politicians aren't allowed to use social media anymore. Because, you know, that would be a freedom of speech issue. And there's been a lot of good things come out of Twitter, too. You know, a lot of the call your representative stuff that, like, shit has actually been stopped from getting worse or changed for the better because of that. But holy fuck, it is so dangerous when you have two presidents, like, one-upping each other with nuclear war boasts. Like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ, something should be done about that, but I don't know on what legal grounding you could do something. I mean, Twitter could block them both, but I mean, I have no idea what kind of effect that would happen.
I mean, at this point, Twitter is just complicit. They're enabling Nazis to be on their site. They know who they are because these people are blocked in places like Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're like, oh yeah, these guys are totally Nazis, but they're totally cool. It's just, you know, tech bro bullshit that's keeping these people. I mean, hell, they allow these dumb shit role players. You linked me this, like, what, Flutterfash or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, oh, it's a Fluttershy avatar with a fucking Nazi helmet and a Nazi fucking flag on the background, and she's calling these people the N-word. And of course, they only had a double-digit number of followers, and they stopped tweeting a couple months ago, but it's just like, these people make these accounts as throwaways, say awful shit, and either get banned or discard that persona and go on to the next one. We really should have companies that try to do better that don't allow fucking white nationalists and fascists space on their platform.
Yeah.
Like, come on, do some curation.
Yeah.
Keep the horny, lose the Nazis. All right, being horny on Maine is not a big deal, but being a Nazi sure as fuck should be.
Yeah.
Oh, I pointed this out to somebody on Twitter that I found quite amusing, that our friends own the Adam and Eve store in Norman, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
They're on Main Street.
Nice.
So they actually are horny on Maine.
Nice. That is quite nice. So, speaking of the social media being a good thing, I do have a thread by Andreas Wolf. You might have seen the tweet, because it actually went outside of furry Twitter.
My God, it got outside the furry
sphere, yes. This is by Vex, a.k.a. at Andreas Wolf. Okay, I'm just going to read the Twitter thread and we can kind of discuss it. But I thought it was good because it's a good distillation of the subject.
All right.
So, it's time for another one of my Twitter rants, and it's a big one. Let's talk about the narrative of the social justice warrior, but also something slightly bigger than that. At its heart, the concept of the SJW is basically a convenient way of dismissing the concerns of marginalized people and their allies if they seem, to put it bluntly, emotionally invested in fixing inequality in any way whatsoever. This is a woman named Chanty Bix from Toronto, Canada. The internet's meme base knows her as, quote, Big Red, if they know her by any name rather than the nameless stereotype of the Tumblr SJW feminist. She was filmed arguing with people outside an MRA event in 2012. MRA being men's rights activists, being basically, what about my penis kind of people. In the video, she's animatedly discussing feminism and occasionally referring to a sheet of paper she's holding. She's visibly irritated and confrontational during the entire video, and isn't always communicating her points very clearly or politely. This was not, admittedly, the most confidently executed defense of feminism ever, but it might be one of the most widely known to internet subcultures. Why? Because marginalized people aren't allowed to be inarticulate, emotional, or irrational, even in their own defense. There is a popular concept in modern society that marginalized people, women, people of color, LGBT folk, and the neurodivergent, the physically disabled, etc., are too emotionally attached to the narrative of their own oppression to be reliable sources of information on it. There's a narrative that marginalized people have some sort of nefarious ulterior motive that they're trying to get something out of this. Of course you'd say racism is a major problem in the United States. You're black, is the quote. The implication being that you stand to gain something. Therefore, for a marginalized person's argument about marginalization to be listened to, they must meet a highly changeable, deeply arbitrary, and frankly impossible standard of detachment, composure, and articulation to be considered, quote, rational. Women who get even slightly annoyed by a man speaking over them are histrionic. People of color who ever discuss aspects of their own lives where they encounter racism have, quote, personal bias. We've seen this for decades, of course, but SJW is a recent and useful catch-all term for the right to use because it compresses well and the compressed information is easier to communicate. It's also less, shall we say, obvious than talking about uppity blacks or loose women. It's still about unacceptable for politicians to openly discuss the danger, quote danger, of people of color or women having more power in society. That's unpalatably fascist to most people. But you can easily get away with talk about, quote, leftist professors, identity politics, safe spaces, etc. With the SJW comes the insidious idea of the, quote, good feminist. The idea that some arbitrary level of discussion about marginalization is acceptable, but if you go, quote, too far, then you've either got a hidden agenda or you're too emotionally invested. But it's also a useful psychological tool for dismissing views that make you uncomfortable. By examining their least articulate defenders and assuming, well, if that's the sort of person defending this idea, it can't be very good, feminism makes a lot of people uncomfortable, because it implies that they've been participating in a society that subjugates women and have probably personally engaged in behaviors that perpetuate that subjugation. That's a super uncomfortable thing to have to consider. Yeah, but if your chosen mental representation of modern feminism is a college student with oddly colored hair who yells and swears a lot and sometimes has to read her talking points off a printout, it becomes way easier to dismiss the entire concept as some ridiculous pseudo-intellectual gibberish jerked up by people with too few, quote, real problems in their life, which is exactly what the right wing wants you to do with pretty much all critical analysis of modern society. Feminists didn't choose Chanty Binks to be representative of feminism as a whole, nor do I think she intended to volunteer herself on that day in 2012. She was chosen by internet culture for that role because of her imperfect defense of the concept allows them to dismiss it. I'm certain there were times when she more eloquently and politely defended feminism, but I can't find them because they probably weren't recorded, and almost all information about her on the internet that can be easily found is from people mocking her for being a, quote, SJW. The fact that her appearance doesn't conform to conventional standards is another aspect of the SJW stereotype that subtly reinforces another right-wing concept, conformity. If you don't look normal, that's synonymous with being bad or wrong. This is why listing your pronouns is considered a SJW-ish thing to do, because normal people don't list their pronouns. Quote, normal people don't dye their hair odd colors or have sidewalks or practice veganism. Quote, normal people don't complain about systemic inequality. And so, of course, Tumblr sits firmly at the heart of the SJW narrative, largely because it's a bunch of nonconformist teens and early 20s people experimenting with self-expression and discussing their life experiences and personal issues. Of course, a lot of the stuff you get out of teens who are just getting to grips with feminism, anti-racism, and LGBT advocacy is going to be incoherent. They're teenagers. Anita Sarkeesian, yes, the devil herself, specifically pointed this out in one of her talks. She basically said that when young feminists start out, they feel like, quote, everything is sexist, everything is racist, everything is homophobic, and you have to point it all out. You know that little soundbite that people have always taken out of context to prove that SJWs are crazy? The narrative of the SJW also provides a useful pre-baked enemy. Video games you don't like getting good reviews? SJWs must be conspiring. Two Griffin disinvited by Anthrocon? The SJWs infested the fandom. Colleges refusing to provide a platform to fascists? Those damn SJWs. To go back to a tweet that was from a cap I saw, 2017 was supposed to be the year that the alt furry and the furry fandom purges the SJWs from the furry fandom, but I guess we were just too strong for some brony circle. Fun fact, that got retweeted by Peter New's wife. Moving back to the Twitter thread, it's still going. It's It's rather long. It was quite a good thread, though. And this narrative is very difficult to disprove because the concept of the SJW is so broad that even if one of the accused people is a feminist or has pro-LGBT views or wrote something on the Twitter that was insufficiently critical of Muslims, it fits. Ultimately, the concept of the SJW basically states that people, who are notably not marginalized, are allowed to set arbitrary limits on how and how much you're allowed to oppose marginalization, because if you exceed them, it might make those people uncomfortable. And that's kind of dumb. So that was it. So that was a fairly long thread that actually hit on a lot of points that I have kind of had to come to grips with myself. The concept of being uncomfortable because, oh, well, feminism makes you uncomfortable because you might have been a dumbass. Oh, shit. I might have been a dumbass. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Or learning about the racist issues in society and realizing that, you know, as a white dude, I don't have to worry about that nearly as much. Or being a dumbass and not understanding the concept of racial privilege and, you know, what white privilege is. And that even I, as a poor white kid growing up, had it still better, probably, than many, 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 many other black kids in general, even who weren't living in poverty, because I was white.
Yeah.
And shit like that. And so this really had an interesting thought because, you know, Vex is one of those people that was, like, formerly a white supremacist. They admit that. And it's like, yeah, this is, I've come out of this, I've gotten better, you know, and I've changed my views. And that's really important to show that people can change. But you have to also kind of own that you had, basically, you were dumbass. You were being stupid. You know, you were ranting about, oh, them SJWs, when it's just basically someone going, hey, I don't like the allegory that a movie has for this, or I really didn't like the fact that the Catherine re-release has a third storyline where the third character is transgender and people are a little bit unhappy because Japan is super fucking bad about handling the whole idea of transgender identity and stuff like that. And it's a matter of, like, getting out from in front of yourself and being willing to listen. Is like, why actually are these people upset? Why would a transgender Asian American person think that this is suboptimal? You know, why would an African American guy have problems with all these white people in Colorado opening up $1 million weed shops while parties in Georgia get 70 people arrested for an ounce of weed?
Yeah.
You know? And it was a really interesting thread that escaped the confines of furry Twitter. From what I saw, like, I didn't delve too deeply into the Twitter thread because inevitably the frog posters come out and it becomes a shit show.
Right.
But it was a very well articulated point. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I read that thread too, and I was like, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And it kind of put in words some things that I probably knew in the back of my head, but hadn't really articulated, you know, in organized thoughts, you know. And I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And like, I admit, I used to be one of those people who was lol SJWs because I was this was like a few many years ago. Like, and there's subs on Twitter, like, that would mock Tumblr teens being mad about stuff. And basically, it boils down to them being teens and learning how to articulate themselves. But, you know, I had that mindset of, you know, well, I'm just this nerdy guy, blah, blah, blah. You know, why should I care what they think? But, you know, that's not the case. And it's a matter of growing up and getting your head out of your ass. So, right. Like, when it comes to talking about Chanty Binks, like, I recognize her as Big Red because back when that happened, I was in those spaces that was like, lol, look at this red-haired feminazi SJW. And now that I'm older, I find those kind of memories deeply embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ah, fuck, you know. And I've had a lot of those moments, and I've said it on the show, where it's just like you have these moments of, ah, Jesus, really? I can't believe that the younger me did that, Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to kick your own ass.
Yeah.
I mean, and yeah, it's a matter of, like, changing your thinking and doing better and listening to marginalized people, but reading that thread also, like, brought up, like, yeah, you know, being in places like Tumblr in Action, where it's basically people tearing down kids making posts on Tumblr about their feelings and giggling along with them, and then, you know, here 5 years on going, ah, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she says a lot of things that I did where they pretty much just use SJW as a blanket term for haha, overreacting as a way to basically downplay the things that they're talking about. They lump it underneath this term that's now derogatory and use it as dismissal.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, you know, any potentially legit concern that people have is like, fucking SJWs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like thought-terminating cliche. It's like, I don't have to consider them further because blah. I don't think that their opinion matters on this any further. So it's just like, so I kind of am uncomfortable when that kind of pops up. Let's think about this a little bit further.
Yeah. And like, the discomfort makes you think, though.
Yeah.
You know, and makes you kind of evaluate your thought process. And other things that are interesting are like, if you see something and you have in your brain, in your internal narrative, you have a knee-jerk reaction. How you act upon it is what defines you as a person. Because, like, I was raised in a very racist environment. My stepdad was a super fucking racist. And, you know, for a long time, a lot of those kinds of the lessons that he taught me just from being around him were in my head. You have those thoughts pop up, and it's like, but if you don't act on in a racist manner, you know, you're doing that self-examination.
Yeah.
And looking at and learning to look at it from other people's point of view and realizing that, yeah, I was taught a lot of bullshit, you know, and it makes you re-examine everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think the average person's reactions to something like Black Lives Matter and why that happened. And now everybody's a lot more conscious of what that even means.
Right.
And now, of course, we have the national fucking headlines of events where meathead cops fucking, well, in this case, that one guy they shot in the hallway crawling and begging for his fucking life. Well, he was white. And so that went really fucking far. And all these black and brown voices are like, hey, this has been happening to us for fucking ever, too. Maybe you'll pay attention now?
No, that it just got swept under.
And, you know, it's super fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's good that people are now more aware of it, but it's also more distressing because it's not the people that are the ones murdering all these people, the cops, aren't, there's nothing happening to them. Like, it's super fucked.
Yeah, there's been like that one guy went to jail. There's like one cop that shot someone, I think it was in the Carolinas somewhere.
Yeah.
Actually got convicted of murder. But that's like one out of the hundreds that have done this.
Yeah. I mean, there was that Twitter thread today about the guy
in the store. Shopping for shampoo. And he was wearing noise-canceling headphones and standing in an aisle in a store and turned around. And there's two cops pointing their guns at him. And they're yelling instructions, and he can barely hear because he's got the noise-canceling headphones on. You know, he's black, you know, we should say that. And he's, like, of course, afraid to move the wrong way because he cites the story you just told about the white guy that was shot and killed had, like, apparently gone to, like, adjust his pants and not even, like, thinking, just this casual maneuver that you probably do 10 times a day, and they fucking blew him away, and I guess they justified it by saying he was reaching for a weapon, even though he wasn't armed. And so this guy is, like, terrified, and he's, like, trying to hear and getting on his knees and keeping his hands in view the whole time, and I'm just like, man, you handled this way better than I would, because I would have been pissing myself.
Yeah, you know? And it's super fucked. These pigs are fucking making him do the hokey pokey, essentially, to not get blown away for their trigger-happy, weak-ass bitch selves.
And in this case, it was a cashier called and basically said, didn't they say he was armed or something?
Yes, they said it was an armed robbery to the cops when the, like, oh, it's just, they thought he was shoplifting. But why the fuck did you even make that call in the first place? just because he was in the shampoo aisle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, did this guy look like he couldn't afford some shampoo? Like, what's your fucking problem, cashier?
And I should also point out, like, a lot of people, when people get shot and killed by cops, they try to, like, sort of excuse it as, well, like, in the case of, like, the one guy was selling cigarettes, they're like, well, that's against the law. And it's like, is that a death penalty? Yeah. Is that a capital offense now? You know, and even if it was, you don't even get a trial? You know, doing something in public like that, whether it's against the law or not, and in the case of the dude in the story, he wasn't even doing anything illegal. It's like, come on, think, you know?
And that what's awful is that so many of these fucking pigs know that they can murder someone and they'll be put on desk duty for a month or two, and that's it. They can kill somebody and nothing happens to them. There was also the other case that happened this week of... This is another one of those fucking gamers and fucking cops. It's this wonderful confluence of two awful things. Where two Call of Duty kids got mad over like a $2 fucking bet.
$1.50.
$1.50?
Yeah.
You can't even buy, like, two McChickens for that. What the fuck, right?
Mm.
You could get 10 nugs at Burger King. They really needed their fucking nugs, I guess. They got this kid to fucking swat someone else, and the kid, thinking it was just going to be a joke, gives this fake address, and the cops show up. The guy walks out, covers his eyes from the blinding lights, that the cops are all outside his house with a bunch of fucking guns, and they just murder the dude. They just fucking flat out blow this dude away.
And then they make his, like, mother and his niece walk over his dying body outside barefoot in the cold to be arrested while he's lying there dying in the doorway.
Yeah, and they're like, they've arrested the swatter and they're hunting down the gamer kids, but the cop ain't gonna see no thing. You know, it's trigger happy piece of shit. They didn't even verify. They hear these wild ass stories and they know that swatting happens, but their first thing is they whip their dicks out and go charging in, ready to fucking kill, when swatting has become a real issue. Like, you probably haven't, but people have seen these videos where some streamer is playing Call of Duty or Counter-Strike or whatever, and the cops kick in the door with guns and arrest the guy on stream on camera.
Jeez.
Because they're like, you know, oh, someone said there was like a triple homicide and you had heads on spikes and it's just this guy playing video games, and the cops don't pull their dicks back and go, oh, we got fucking tricked, and instead have to beat the shit out of some poor gamer, or in the case of this one, murder a guy. So basically what I'm saying is that we need to, like, disarm the police force and really rein them fuck in really hard. You know, make it be like in the UK. You got fucking bats.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, will still... But it's not like bang bang.
You know, you gotta have some physical strength and not be a fucking coward to kill someone at the billy club. It's one of those things where it's gotten to the point, honestly, that any time I see, like, the fucking Blue Lives Matter logo on a car, I'm like, they're a racist.
Yeah. Because you know they didn't give a shit about cop lives until black people started complaining about being murdered.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, these people are complaining about being murdered.
Oh.
I better support the cops. The fuck kind of thought process is that?
Yeah.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this also made this bringing this back around to furry. It's like, man, Judy Hopps is a great character. She's a fucking cop. Fuck cops. But I want to fuck the bunny. Fuck the bunny. There's also fuck cops.
But she's a good cop.
Except she's not. She's a dirty cop who colludes with the fucking mafia in, like, the first day. Like, she's a dirty cop.
And like the headline says, meter maid starts race war.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those things. And then Nick goes on to be a cop, too. Fuck. It's like, why can't these characters not present to, you know, be part of this horrible construct society?
The excuse that a lot of people give for these cop killings are, well, there are a few bad apples. Majority of cops aren't like that. But the thing that they forget is that the second part of that saying is, a few bad apples spoil the bunch. You need to get rid of the bad apples, or you ruin the entire institution. So sure, maybe there's a few bad apples in the police force, but you need to get them out of the police force and not just protect each other because of some notion of brotherhood that anyone wearing the shield has to be protected. It's like, no, you need to get rid of the people that are basically destroying the whole institution.
Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't be excused. They shouldn't be, you know, when they misjudge and they kill someone, that's...
There needs to be consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making a bad decision and murdering someone, you know, for an old person, you go to jail, but for a cop, you get paid vacation while everything's under investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some people that have a conscience, like, okay, they might carry that guilt with them, but it seems like for a lot of these folks who get off on the authoritarian nature of their jobs, that there's, you know, they're taking out the trash. Or, you know, these are the people that have fucking Punisher logos on their cop cars.
Yeah, that whole thing. Yeah. We talked about that back when it happened. And they made them take that off.
Yeah. Marvel is like, uh-uh.
Not cool.
Like, did you know that this logo is copyright to Marvel Comics, which is owned by Disney? You don't do this. It's fucked up. Did you guys have anything further you want to talk about other than, like, Wall SJWs and fuck cops?
I met my niece.
Oh, yeah. So, let's bring it back to something happy.
Okay, all right. So, I hate kids, and I'm used to babies creeping me out. Like, my mom worked at a daycare, and I would pick her up from work because she didn't drive. And sometimes if I showed up a little early or she had to stay a little late because a parent was running late, and I would walk in there, and, like, babies are basically like, oh, new person. So they all look at you. And it creeped the fuck out of me. But when it is your family, it is totally fucking different. Like, for the last 4 months since she was born, I've wanted to meet my niece. And I was honestly really looking forward to it. And it is such a weird thing for me to feel. But, like, my sister is really happy. She's being a great mom. And, you know, and I hadn't seen my sister and my brother-in-law in a little while. So it was cool to go out there and see them anyway. But, you know, to meet my niece and, like, you know, she looks at me and, like, she smiles at me. Or, like, I was going to say holds my hand, but basically grips my finger in her hand because mm-hmm. she's so tiny. You know, my sister does this thing where she basically, like, blows on her chin, like, you know, you give someone a raspberry,
mm-hmm.
and it makes her smile and giggle every time, and it's just the cutest thing ever. And I can see some of my mom in her face. I can see my sister in her face, and I'm just like, man, I love this kid, you know?
It's like my oldest niece. I can see my sister in her hands down. Not so much the younger two, but my oldest niece is definitely, it's like fucking mini-me. I swear to God. you put me, my sister, and my eldest niece, and you can just say, yeah, you guys are related. And, so, yeah, I know what you mean about the family resemblance.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny is that, like, I feel this strongly that I love this kid who is not my child. I can't imagine what it's like for a parent,
mm-hmm.
especially for a mother, to give birth to a baby and to have that close bond. You know, even like one relative removed, me being an uncle, I'm just like, I'm so in love with this kid and I want the best for her. And I told my sister I want to, like, start a college fund for her. You know, I figure I got 18 years. If I start putting, you know, 50 or 100 bucks a month, mm-hmm. or a paycheck by every time now, You know, maybe I could have like a decent amount to give her when she graduates high school in 18 years. Be like, if you want to go to college, you can go to college. You know, if you want to go into the workforce, you might be able to get a used car or something. I mean, I don't know. I want her to have a good life. I'm not going to have kids of my own.
And $25 a pay aside in a savings account for her.
Yeah. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm like, I'm sort of head over heels, and I want to see her grow up, and I want to be part of her life, you know? So I want to start visiting them more often than just once every year or so. Yeah. But yeah, it was a really magical and meaningful experience for me to have.
And you don't expect it when it's not your kid, but suddenly it's like, oh my God. I know exactly what you're going through.
I love. It's not just me. I'm not crazy.
No, I feel the same way about my nieces and nephew.
You feel that family connection, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I am super excited. Like, my eldest niece is, she's going to be 13 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And she's getting into anime, and she's getting into this. And, like, I'm super excited for her to be old enough to, like, come out here and visit for, like, couple weeks or a summer so I can take her around and do stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the oldest, the middle one is like 4 years younger than her. So there's a good age gap between them. So it's going to be many years before she's going to be able to do the same thing or start hitting that threshold of, you know, come out and visit. But the oldest one is starting to get to that level where she could come out for like a week or 2 weeks and we can go and do stuff.
Yeah.
Take her to Akon. Take her here. Take her there. Take her. She's a little weeaboo.
Aww.
And just show her and do stuff with her. And it's great when they're a baby, but the older that they get, when they, like, the middle two, or, well, the middle girl and the younger boy are, they've gotten more articulate through the years. They lost the baby list. They're starting to form, like, coherent. Before they weren't all that coherent, you know, they were kind of little kid ramble, but watching them as they get older and they get more developed, and you know, their whole concepts changing, and they're growing like basically into more little people and less little kids, if that makes sense.
They start forming coherent thoughts and stuff.
Yeah, like that. And start developing beyond their little kid personalities, kind of like their more adult interests. And you see where they're just going. It's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, here's family that I can do stuff with and I can introduce them to and, you know, do all the fun aunt stuff with. Mm-hmm. It's not just me. Like, Siam is super interested in Sarah, who, like you, doesn't like kids at all, actually likes my nieces and nephew and, you know, is perfectly okay with them, you know, doing things with them. He enjoys going out, and we took all three of them to a Harry Potter festival, all three of us, and we had a good day out just bouncing around with the kids.
Yeah.
It was great fun.
So I'm telling Tyrion this, you know, about these feelings, like, I really want to support her, you know, and I was like, is that weird? You know, she's not actually my kid. He's like, oh, honey, because Tyrion always, like, whenever I think I'm being strange or something, he's like, no, your emotions are completely natural. And he said something like, it's the gay uncle's biological imperative to take care of their siblings' children and to help provide for them.
Does he have siblings?
Yes, Tyrion has one brother who does not have children.
I'm curious if he'll experience this too whenever his brother, if he has kids, has kids.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if his brother will have kids or not, but I mean, it'd be neat if he did, because then we would have, like, local nieces or nephews, too.
Yeah, my sister's kids have one poly aunt who's also LGBT. She's got two step aunts that are married to women, and another step aunt that's married to a man, but he's also one of the most, how to put it, he plays along with his little girls very well. I mean, they want to have tea parties. He has tea parties usually involves superheroes and dolls. So, you know, they're raising them like whole mixed bag. And like, if the little girls want to paint his toenails, he lets them paint his toenails.
Right.
And he sports them for days until it wears off. I mean, he does a really good job of just being a dad.
Yeah.
You know, across the board, just being really loving with his little girls. So it's just,
it's really something. I'm looking forward to when she gets old enough for me to, like, talk to her about books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've already ordered her books and everything. She actually has quite a few little books. And something my sister showed me, which I was, like, really surprised about, was she's like, hey, I wonder if you remember these. And she pulled out these two very old, little tattered-looking storybooks, British storybooks.
Mm-hmm.
And they were gifts to me from my grandparents when I was, like, 1 year old.
And she had them?
And apparently my mom had given them to my sister when she was a little girl. And my sister had them in her stuff all those years. And I'm looking at them like, oh my God, I remember these. I haven't seen these in so long. Where were they? And she's like, Mom gave them to me. And now I have them for her. So they're in my niece's little library with the other books.
It's like all of my contingency plans. Like, I inherited stuff when my grandmother and the mother died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all these contingency plans is like, okay, when I pass, they're going to my sister's kids to keep in the family.
Right.
And it's kind of like we have this whole, we don't have kids. We're never going to have kids, at least in this particular family. I can't have them.
Mm-hmm.
So unless another gal comes into the picture, which is, it is possible, but it's like, okay, well, when we pass on, where is all of our stuff going to go?
Mm-hmm.
My sister's kittens is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Sarah, we have additional generations to leave stuff for.
My sister, Sarah has half brothers, but he hasn't seen in like 8 years. Dave doesn't have any family to speak of. So, okay, where is this going to go? Okay, it'll go to sister's kids.
Yep. So that was, I was out there basically Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I had terrible flight experiences both ways. The actual in the air flying wasn't bad, but I got delayed both ways. And I eventually got home like very late on the evening of Christmas Day, and then Tyrion and I opened presents.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my Christmas. I had to go back to work on the 26th. I would have liked it to have been longer, but, you know, lack of time off. But I would like to try to do it different next year, or maybe see them like middle of the year or something.
Budget some more time?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was a really good time. That was Christmas for me. And then New Year, we had the annual New Year's Eve party at Tyrion and I's house. I guess we had, what, 30, 40 people there?
I don't think that many. I only poured out about, some didn't partake. I poured out about 23 glasses of champagne.
Okay.
So probably about, I'm going to say about 27, because not all the ones I poured out got drank.
Okay.
So roughly. And some people left.
Close to 30, then. And it was a pretty good time. Like, we sent out the invites really late this year, and we forgot to ask people what they were bringing. So we were actually kind of worried that, like, we were going to get, like, 9 bags of ice and nothing else. I mean, we had ordered pizza, of course. But it actually turned out quite well. Like, we ended up with, like, a variety of food and drinks, and there was plenty of stuff to go around for everybody.
I think you've been doing it enough years now that people, you know, know to kind of what to expect. Provide pizza. I usually bring like a whole bunch of ham, but Rahata couldn't come this year because it was so cold.
Yeah.
But I brought, what did I bring? A whole bunch of dips and other stuff.
Yeah.
Sarah brought
his famous spinach artichoke
dip, which is crack.
And it was demolished pretty much, wasn't it?
I think about 3/4 gone. I sent the rest home with to Noxie and Glar.
Okay.
So we went out to Thanksgiving a couple years ago to my sister's house, and my dad lives not far from my sister. And I convinced Sarah to make that. And so for the Thanksgiving pre-meal nibble. And my dad's sitting there, and he's like, oh, this is good. And then he proceeds to sit there, and I can't stop. And he's just like, oh, it's like, you like that, Dad? It's like, it's not bad. Oh, it's like, I can't stop eating it. It's addictive. So funny story behind how I ended up brought all that dip to your house is my work caters lunch every day.
Oh, yeah.
And that week they apparently kept ordering as much as they normally do, but a lot of people were off and out, so the office was probably not quite at half, but close to half.
Mm.
So we had one Mexican day, and I walk into the kitchen. Because if you walk into the kitchen about 1:30 or so, you can pick up leftovers. I go in there about 2:15, and she's still packing up leftovers. We got this one lady that she just takes care of the office.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this entire serving tray of sour cream. And it's like, is that up? Can I take some of that? And she's like, yeah, do you want the whole pan? It's like, no, I don't need that much sour cream. She's like, yeah, take it. It's like, I don't want the whole pan of sour cream. So I end up getting this gallon baggie because they keep gallon bags and sandwich bags.
She's like, take this now.
So I end up taking most of a bag of sour cream home, gallon bag, Ziploc bag home. I use for a little bit of something, I forget what. And the rest is like, I've got this, I'll make some dip. It's the only thing I could think of to do with a gallon of sour cream.
My God.
So I made up three batches of dip for your party.
Nice.
At this point, we are an hour 40 plus, and my battery on my laptop is down to 30%, so we should probably wrap it up.
Okay.
Because this will be fun to edit, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But this has been episode 371 of Southpaws.
You can tell that we haven't changed.
No, not at all. But you can find us on Twitter at SouthpawsCast. You can find us on Patreon, Southpaw. You can find us on Tumblr, southpawscast.tumblr.com.
I'm glad you remember all this because I haven't written it all down yet.
You can find me on Twitter at Savern Drake.
You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf.
And I'm on Twitter as Chimera, Khymaera.
Our email address is southpawcast. I think I missed an S when making the account.
Okay.
At gmail.com. You can still send stuff to our old address. We're not ditching it completely, and it'll get forwarded our way. And actually, we did have some emails for this week, but we're an hour 40 in, and we don't have time for that. We're full of words. Sorry. But if we have a Patreon, if you'd like to toss them away our way, feel free to check it out. Episodes are a day early and at higher quality. And that's about that.
And on that note, good night and for the rich.